Psalm 37. This is a manifesto of how to live in an unjust world, so it's got a lot of relevance, obviously, to every generation, but this might be good food for thought for all of us. How do you live in a world where there's a lot of injustice? Like Psalm 9 to 10 and Psalm 25 and Psalm 34, which we've all done all those, it's an acrostic psalm, so it's alphabetical. The psalmist calls on his age and experience to contrast two groups of people and God's judgment on their lives. Through greed, neglect, natural conditions, and historical events, including war, the psalmist finds himself in a society in which some have grown rich at the expense of others. How are the dispossessed to act? In what kind of project are those concerned for the dispossessed to be involved? Where is God in all this, and how are people to do God's will? The psalm is a call not to lose heart when the irreligious seem to prosper, but to continue to trust in God and to wait upon God's grace. Justice will prevail, and the psalm begins with an urgent plea to look to Yahweh. Verse 1, do not fret because of bad people. Don't be envious of wrongdoers. And now, as a bit of an introduction, he's going to use a lot of other words to describe this group, so I'll just run you through them. We'll come to them later. He calls these people in other verses, he calls them irreligious, he calls them those who plot against the just, those not blessed by Yahweh. He calls them those who live in opulence, they prosper, they tower over people like a luxuriant cedar. These are all describing one group in the community. But he says they're going to fade and wither. They'll be no more. Their death, their day of retribution is coming. Their sword will enter their own heart. They'll perish, they'll vanish, they'll be cut off. They'll be no more, they'll be altogether destroyed. So this is a quick rundown of what you're going to find in the psalm of this particular group. But he now talks... Verse 2, for they wither quickly like grass, they wilt like the green of the fields. And I just draw your attention to the vegetation image, which comes back a lot throughout this psalm. He'll talk about being put to shame in bad seasons, literally, evil times. The enemies of God are like the glory of the pastures. Another image from nature. He talks about their children, but he uses the word seed, not the word child, and he uses the word shoot also, and they're towering like a luxuriant cedar. We'll come back later in the psalm. Yeah. So verse 3, he now talks about the other group. Trust in Yahweh and do good. Okay. Now later he'll use a lot of other words about this other group. I'd like to be on this side of the ledger, wouldn't you? So let's have a look. These are people who cultivate faithfulness, who commit their life's journey to Yahweh, who rest in Yahweh and hope in Yahweh. These are the meek. The poor and needy who walk uprightly. These are all phrases taken from the later part of the psalm. You'll find them in a moment. These are the ones who are generous and keep giving, who are blessed by Yahweh, who are ever giving liberally and lending. These are the just. They hope in Yahweh and keep to his way. These are people of peace. So you see what I'm trying to get at. He's putting the world into two big groups, a bit simplistically, but there it is. Here he goes on to describe these a bit more. They live in the land, they cultivate faithfulness. Verse 4, let Yahweh be your delight. He will give you what your heart is seeking. And throughout the psalm, he'll use plenty of other phrases to draw that out. What's it mean that he will be your delight and give you what your heart is seeking? He'll say later in the psalm, Yahweh will act on your behalf. You'll inherit the land. You'll enjoy abundant peace and prosperity. He says you're better off having little. Yahweh upholds these people. Their heritage will last forever. They'll have abundance. They won't lack bread. They'll always have a home. They'll dwell in the land forever. They'll experience salvation and liberation from Yahweh. And he'll also say, the meek will inherit the land and enjoy abundant prosperity. Their inheritance will last forever. In the days of famine, they have abundance, he says. And he also says, I think this bloke must have been a little bit naive or had been brought up in a monastery or something, or spent his whole life in a presbytery or whatever. Because he says, I have not seen the just forsaken or their children begging bread. Well, if he hadn't seen it, I wonder why he hadn't opened his eyes. You know, there's a little. The psalm is not all perfectly adult stuff. It's a bit Pollyanna, is that the word? Or a little bit. Anyhow, I'm not here to denigrate the psalmist, but this is a wise old man talking, but I think he's lost it a bit. But maybe. He, so, he says, their children become a blessing. You shall always have a home, he says. The just shall inherit the land and live in it forever. There's prosperity for the peaceable. No. Well, let's go on and we'll find all those statements being made in the psalm. One thing he is saying is that the just are to remain in solidarity with others in need. And I quote here from Deuteronomy chapter 15, which I think is a lovely passage, verses 7 to 10, which reads, is there anyone among you in need? A member of your community in any of your towns within the land that Yahweh your God is giving you, do not be hard-hearted or tight-fisted towards your needy neighbor. You should rather open your hand, willingly lending enough to meet the need, whatever it may be. Be careful that you do not entertain a mean thought, thinking the seventh year, the year of remission, is near. And therefore view your needy neighbor with hostility and give nothing. The law said, at the end of every 7 years, the Jubilee year, all debts were cancelled. So if I lend you something in year one, well, you've got 6 years to pay it back, and the chances of getting it are pretty high. If it's November the 30th, and next January the 1st, all debts are going to be remitted, I'm a little bit less likely to lend you anything because you've only got a week to pay it back and the chances of getting it back are nearly nil. So the psalmist is suggesting that's a mean thought. But I think by your laughter and by my even thinking of it, it's a sure sign that we've had that little thought in our little heads. Your neighbour might cry to Yahweh against you and you would incur guilt. Give liberally, says the author of Deuteronomy. Give liberally and be ungrudging when you do so. For on this account, Yahweh your God will bless you in all your work and in all that you undertake. I know quite a number, and you would know more than me, even close to me, who've looked forward to their retirement. Retirement comes, the kids get into the trouble. All their retirement money goes to get their kid out of trouble, and they live in poverty for the rest of their life. But they're happy, beautiful people. And I look at them and think, wow, of such are the kingdom of heaven. You know. So here we are. Love will get us to do wonderful things. Here's the book of Sirach, chapter 29, verses 1 to 13. I'm just trying to say what I think the psalmist is getting at. The merciful lend to their neighbours. By holding out a helping hand, they keep the commandments. Lend to your neighbour in his time of need. Repay your neighbour when a loan falls due. Keep your promise and be honest with him. And on every occasion you'll find what you need. Many refuse to lend, not because of meanness, but from fear of being defrauded needlessly. Nevertheless, be patient with someone in humble circumstances and do not keep him waiting for your alms. Help the poor for the commandment's sake, and in their need do not send them away empty-handed. Lose your silver for the sake of a brother or a friend. Do not let it rust under a stone and be lost. Lay up your treasure according to the commandments of the Most High, and it will profit you more than gold. Store up almsgiving in your treasury, and it will rescue you from every disaster. Better than a stout shield and a sturdy spear, it will fight for you against the enemy. I gave you those texts because you don't often read those books, and I don't often either. And there's some nice kind of reminders in there that we've got to work out as best we can. Well, let's go to verse 5 now, and we'll run through the psalm reasonably quickly now. Verse 5 of Psalm 37. Commit the direction of your life to Yahweh. Trust in him, and he will act. He will make your justice shine forth like the dawn, and your judgments like the noonday sun. Rest in Yahweh, hope in him. Do not fret over those who prosper as they carry out their evil schemes. Rest in Yahweh reminded me of this psalm. Be still and know that I am God. I am exalted among the nations. I am exalted in the earth. It's not a call to contemplative life, though what a beautiful thing that would be, though it's often quoted in that. Be still, it's actually talking about warfare in a way. Like, let me do it for you. You just let me act for you, says God. You be still, I'll do it. Here's Psalm 62, for God alone my soul waits in silence. And Psalm 62, verse 5, for God alone my soul waits in silence, my hope is from him. All inviting us to rest in Yahweh and hope in him. Do not fret over those who prosper as they carry out their evil schemes. I was just thinking the other day, because it arose in my mind in relation to someone else, I was thinking of the thief on the cross, you know, and the one who, the good thief, so-called. And I was thinking, what a shame it would have been if that good thief had been so upset with the system, so angry at the soldiers, you know, so bitter about the high priest and his life had become a failure. Imagine if he was so caught up in all that, the way I can sometimes get caught up with the political world we're in and whatever's happening. What a pity he would be so caught up with that that he didn't actually look at Jesus or listen to Jesus. So he had enough space in his mind to say to Jesus, look, today be with me in paradise. So if we get angry, and we should, if we get upset, which we will, we've got to keep directing our heart in the right place all the time, or we'll get so caught up in what's catching us up that we'll miss the essentials. Rest in Yahweh, hope in him. Verse 8, restrain your anger, control your rage. Don't fret, it only leads to evil, says this wise old man. For the wicked shall be cut off, those who wait for Yahweh shall inherit the land. Jesus said much the same, but it was kind of like an ultimate thing in a way, you know, because a lot of those waiting for Yahweh don't inherit the land, short of heaven. But perhaps they would if we follow Jesus, yeah. If the whole world was as lovely as him, there'd be a wonderful world we're in. Wait a moment. The irreligious, they're gone, they're no more. Search them out, they're not there. But the meek shall inherit the land and enjoy abundant prosperity. One of the Beatitudes of Jesus in Matthew chapter 5. The meek will inherit the land. A direct quotation from Psalm 37, verse 11. The wicked plot against the just. They gnash their teeth at them. But Yahweh laughs at the wicked. He sees that their hour is coming. The wicked unsheathe the sword and draw the bow to bring down the poor and needy, to kill those who live upright lives. Their sword shall enter their own heart. Their bow shall be broken. Better the few things owned by a just person than the opulence of a multitude of the wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but Yahweh sustains the just. And I was reminded of two statements from the book of Proverbs and one from the book of Tobit that seem to say much the same thing. Better is a little with the fear of Yahweh than great treasure and trouble with it. Better is a little with righteousness than large income with injustice. And Tobit, a little righteousness is better than wealth with wrongdoing. Verse 18. Yahweh watches over the days of the blameless. Their heritage will last forever. The book of Sirach. Fight to the death for truth, and Yahweh God will fight for you. Pretty good statement. John 11. Those who believe in me, even though they die, shall live. Their heritage will last forever. Verse 19 of the psalm. They are not put to shame in evil times. In the days of famine they have all they need. But the wicked perish, and the enemies of Yahweh are like the glory of the pastures. They vanish like smoke. They vanish away. The wicked borrow and do not pay back. The just are generous and keep giving. Is the psalmist saying that the wicked do not pay back because they have come upon hard times? In other words, they have suffered the punishment of God for their sins? Is that what his mind is? Whereas the just have been blessed with abundance and can repay their debts with plenty left over? Is that the meaning of verse 21? I'm not sure. Or is he saying in verse 21, the wicked borrow and do not pay back, that the wicked are rich because they take and don't give back? That's why they're so rich. They don't pay their taxes, whereas the ordinary people have to, and so on. The poor are poor, but they're generous. I don't know. I don't think there's enough evidence to answer which of those he's saying in verse 21. The wicked borrow and do not pay back. They don't pay back because they've come on hard times, or they don't pay back because that's why they're rich. The just are generous and keep giving. And verse 22, those blessed by Yahweh shall inherit the land, those declared evil by him shall be cut off. Yahweh makes secure our steps. It's he who holds us in his heart. That's nice. As we journey through life, Yahweh is the one who holds us in his heart. As we journey through life, we might stumble, but we shall not fall, for Yahweh holds us by the hand. And flipping into my head is an image we had in primary school, you've all seen it, of a little boy and a little girl, I think, about to cross a bridge, and there's an angel. Yes. Well, it's lovely, and that's what children, as long as we mature, we realize it's actually God. And given a choice between an angel holding your hand and God holding your hand, well, they could have one each. I mean, the more the merrier. But if you've got a choice, I think I'd like it to be God. So we're dealing with symbols here, lovely symbols that communicate beautifully to us. Why did I remember that from 60 years ago? Yeah. So all those images are important for children and adults, because we're only children with big bodies, to somehow find ways of entering into the mystery. Jeremiah says in chapter 10, I know, Yahweh, that the way of human beings is not in their control, that mortals as they walk cannot direct their steps. Yahweh is guiding us. And Proverbs, the human mind plans the way, but Yahweh directs the steps. And again in Proverbs, all our steps are ordered by Yahweh. How can we understand our own ways? They're all pretty wise statements, really. We do our best, but ultimately we're in the hands of God. And as I had to remind myself, as you probably know, I've been asked to be parish priest of Kippax, and my little thought came from John of the Cross. I always go to him when things happen. And he says, what's the good of doing one thing for God if he asks you for something else? So what would be the good of my doing all these wonderful things for God that I think I'm doing, you know what I mean? If God, through the providence, wants me to be there, well, isn't that the best place to be? So you easily move from here to there. Because we're in bigger hands than our own, thank God. Verse 25. I have been young, and this is the bit that I kind of wonder about. I have been young, but now I'm old, and I've never seen the just forsaken or their children begging bread. Well, I've been young and now I'm old, and I've often seen the just forsaken and their children begging bread. And so there we are, we're living in a different world. They're always giving liberally and lending, and their children will be blessed. Anyhow, the advice is good. Avoid evil, he says. Do good, you'll always have a home. For Yahweh loves justice. He will not forsake his faithful ones. And as we see Jesus dying on the cross, we, like the apostles, think, what's all this about? But the resurrection makes us realize we were too short-sighted, that God's love is everlasting and death is only a blip in our existence, and we have to think bigger than death. The irreligious, he says, verse 28, are altogether destroyed. The children of the wicked shall be cut off. The just shall inherit the land and live in it forever. The mouth of the just utters wisdom. The tongue pronounces a true judgment. They carry in their hearts the law of their God. Their steps do not falter. They carry in their hearts the law of their God. That's beautiful. In their hearts. Their steps do not falter, which reminds me of Isaiah here. Listen to me, you who know righteousness, you people who have my law in your hearts. And Jeremiah, I will put my law within them. I'll write it on their hearts. So it's not just doing it out there to submit, it's actually doing it from within. Verse 32. The wicked watch for the just and seek to kill them. Yahweh will not abandon them to their power or let them be condemned when they are brought to trial. Hope in Yahweh, keep to his way. He will raise you up to inherit the land, and you will see the destruction of the irreligious. I have seen the wicked puffed up with pride, towering like a luxuriant cedar, he says. I passed by again, and they were no more. Though I sought them, they could not be found. Observe the blameless, says this wise man. Keep your eyes on the upright. Prosperity is for the people of peace. But transgressors shall be altogether destroyed. The posterity of the irreligious shall be cast off. The deliverance of the just comes from Yahweh. He is their strength in time of trouble. Yahweh strengthens them and rescues them. He rescues them from the wicked and saves them because they take refuge in him. So this psalm is not a prayer, obviously. It's a reflection on life by a person with limited wisdom, but it's got a lot of beautiful things in it. And I thought I'd conclude by showing you, in a way, there are quite a few parallels between this psalm and the Beatitudes. So I've offered you the Beatitudes there in black, and in between, some verses from this psalm, which link in. So there's a lot in common. That's about all I'd like to say. Let me run the Beatitudes in Matthew 5, 3 to 10. The first is, blessed are the poor in spirit, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. In general, that's a mood, the mood of this psalm. The second one of the Beatitudes of Jesus, blessed are those who mourn, they shall be comforted. And in verse 14 of our psalm, it talks about the wicked bring down the poor and needy. Now, so it's caused them to mourn. They've lost something, they've been oppressed, mourning, but they will be comforted, said Jesus, because God will look after them, which of course is the theme of our psalm. The third beatitude of Jesus, blessed are the meek, they will inherit the land, is a direct quotation from verse 11 of this psalm. Fourth, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice. This psalm has frequently used the word just or righteous throughout. Well, Jesus says they will be filled. And I won't give you any particular verse, but it's throughout the psalm, that theme. And the fifth beatitude of Jesus, blessed are the merciful, they will receive mercy. And in two places here, the just are generous and keep giving. That's verse 21. Verse 26, they are ever giving liberally and lending. They're caring for others, in other words. The sixth, there's no parallel to this one that I can find in the psalm. Blessed are the pure in heart, they shall see God, is an extraordinary statement of Jesus. Beautiful statement. And I see God here, in each other, in the world. And like, but if pure of heart, you have to be pure of heart to see. Otherwise, if you're all, yeah. So the more pure we are, the more we will see God. But the seventh one, blessed are the peacemakers. They will be called children of God. Reminds me of verse 37. Prosperity is for the peaceable. And finally, again, the mood of the psalm. Blessed are those who are persecuted because they're just. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven.